Beyond the Beauty is a production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Bobby Brown.
This season of Beyond the Beauty has been talking to founders of beauty companies about how they started, why they started, what they're struggling with. And I wanted to do the season based on these amazing founders because I was about to launch my new brand. And not only do I give them advice, they have given me a ton of advice and have been mentors to me. So I love talking to people that have done it differently than I know. And I also love sharing what I know. And it's been a really interesting season talking to all these different, you know, founders of beauty brands, you know, some women, some guys, some natural companies, some not, and even, you know, pioneers who've been in the space before me. And I love mostly being able to understand how people do things, how they do it differently. And I just think it's really important for people out there that want to start their own businesses just to hear other stories so, A, you could relate, or maybe you can get inspired. I'm someone that likes to not only talk about being an entrepreneur, but I really love to talk what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a mother, what it means to be a friend, you know, how that defines you. And I'm constantly working on myself, and I'm really looking forward to the next season, which is why I want to talk to my next guest, Anjali, who is a friend who I actually met when I was doing a speech, and she was running the event at Google. Was it a women's group? What was it?
So I don't remember who had formally extended the invitation to you, but it was probably Women at Google, which I was on the steering committee of. So that was when. It was a while ago.
So I did it, but I got, you know, much more than I thought, which was this long friendship where you came up to me afterwards and you were such a cool, like you were the head of legal at Google. Like you were just not some kid sitting in the audience. And then we became friends. And then when my son was looking for work after college, you mentored him.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, I'm so grateful that I went to that talk and got to meet you there. And I had always been a long admirer of your brand and what you had built. And, you know, certainly as a girl of color at a certain time, you were the OG. I mean, that was what introduced me to makeup, was your line. And feeling like I could feel beautiful in a time when everything else that I was seeing in media was telling me that I was not the standard of beauty, and being able to find things that worked for me was huge. And then hearing your story, I was like, she is the coolest. Like, I just want to know her. And I was really embarrassed that afterwards that I did that to you, because I've never just like bum rushed somebody like that, but I just felt this immediate connection to you, to your story, how you talked about your family. We're both from Chicago. So I think there are just so many synergies, and I really felt compelled to do that. And I don't think I've ever done that. Like, I was really kind of mortified later, but I'm glad it worked out.
But that is in your nature to do that, because you are, you know, you say you're these things, but you're also very fearless and incredibly inspirational and interesting. So, you know, I just want to spend a second on, like, I can't even like remember every little thing you've done, but what did you do before Google?
Okay, so my career is a bit of a windy road. So I'm a lawyer by training, as you mentioned. So I started my career post-law school living in London at a big New York law firm called Sherman & Sterling. I spent a few years there, and I went there and spent 2 years in the London office, traveling over Europe, came back to the New York office. And then about a year into my time in New York, the 9/11 happened. And when I came back to New York, I always knew that I didn't want to stay at a big firm forever. I sort of tripped into that job. But 9/11 was a big wake-up call, and I always had a very strong bleeding heart. You know, I was a very, I had a strong impetus to do good in the world. And so that was kind of the kick in the pants I needed to go do it. So I left Sherman & Sterling and went to the Robin Hood Foundation. So that right in the aftermath.
See, I didn't know that. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I spent 3 years at Robin Hood Foundation doing sort of consulting work, essentially, for the grant recipients of Robin Hood. And it was an extraordinary time. Really important work. It was really part of the fabric of the city and the rebuild of the city. So it was really humbling to be a part of that, very on the ground. But I wasn't practicing law there. And then I kind of realized I missed the law, which I never thought would be words that would come out of my mouth. And so I ended up at a recently started nonprofit called Acumen Fund, which is now called Acumen. I went there as the general counsel and so helped us set up our offices in India and Pakistan and, you know, just figuring out how to do these grants and equity investments in different companies and nonprofits around the world. And then after a few years there, I was recruited to Google. So Acumen was a big grant recipient of Google when Google.org first started. And I honestly had no idea what I was doing there. When I walked in there, I was like, I don't understand how the internet works. I don't understand how Google makes money. I was really clueless walking into that job. But it worked out great. And I ended up loving it. I stayed there for many years.
And then you went to Warby Parker.
And then I went to Warby Parker. Yeah. So funny enough, one of the founders of Warby Parker knew me from my time at Acumen. And so when I was a GC there, he was running one of the nonprofits right out of college that we funded. And we ran into each other at a conference. And he came up to me and was like, "No, do you remember me? I'm doing this thing now." I was like, "Good for you." I didn't wear glasses, so I really didn't understand the pain point. I didn't understand what they were building. But then he reached out to me when I was at Google for about 6 years. And he was like, "Hey, would you talk to me about this position? We're thinking about hiring a general counsel and we'd like that to be you."
But the pattern is that you don't know what you're doing when you take these jobs and you just go in and you figure it out.
Yeah, that's very much a pattern. And it's funny because especially as a lawyer, I think that's not typical because usually you're, as a lawyer, paid for what you already know. And then you do that again and again, and you sort of double down on that expertise and just get to charge more and more for that expertise. And what I found is, A, that's not fun for me. So I'm happy to do it to a point, but I get bored really easily doing that. And I think there's way better lawyers than me, frankly. Like, I think there's like people who are so good at what they do with the legal stuff, and they really love the nuances and the weeds of the law. But I like, you know, figuring it out, untangling the spaghetti, and then passing it off to somebody else who can do it again and again, and then moving on to the next thing.
Because how long were you at Warby?
I was there 3 years.
3 years. And then you went to?
Well, then I left because I got a book deal. So I ended up writing a book. Which had nothing to do with any of this stuff.
And the name of the book?
The book is called Stalking God, My Unorthodox Search for Something to Believe In.
And it is so funny. It is honestly, it's a comedy because you are hysterical. You're one of those like bright brains, but super funny.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you. That's the goal. Yeah, it was a really fun project. I had come up with this idea with my daughter, who just turned 11, if you can believe it. I think she was like 3 when you and I met, probably.
Yeah.
So she just turned 11. But when she was born, I realized that I didn't really know what I believed about religion and spirituality and sort of the big questions in life that you couldn't Google an answer to. But I realized that Zia is my daughter's name, that she would one day soon be asking me all kinds of things that I didn't know. And so maybe I would try to figure it out. So it started as just a little project. I would go and meet like a kooky healer, or I would go to like some spiritual thing and do little things around the city. And then it sort of took on a life of its own and turned into this project. And it was sort of before everybody was meditating. You know, it's like none of that stuff was super mainstream, at least in my circles. And so I still felt like I was a little out there doing this, but I was willing to try. And I think what people responded to is like, I told the stories at like cocktail parties and they were funny and my friends would laugh. And then people were just like, you have to write this stuff down. Like there's something here. And then it turned into a book.
And then you've had one more job before we go into your new life, right? You had one more gig, which was at Cheddar.
Yes, correct. So once, as my book was coming out, I think when I finished the book, I literally turned in the final draft, and an old colleague from Google who had started Cheddar, John Steinberg, he reached out to me and was like, you know, we're building this thing. It was sort of the same thing. He's like, we're building this thing. Would you come talk to us? And we think we need a chief people officer. This is how the conversation started. And I was like, I don't know that stuff, but yeah, I have nothing to do. I'm happy to chat. And when he was telling me what they were doing, I was like, oh, this is pretty interesting. And I know nothing about the news world or media in that way, apart from my time working on YouTube stuff. And I was like, I'm curious. Sure, I'm happy to do this. And I love culture. I think that stuff is really important. How you treat employees, how to get the best from people, diversity, inclusion, all those issues were things that I was super interested in. So I took the job, and then this also became a pattern where they kind of threw in the second job. They're like, oh, can you also be our general counsel? I was like, yeah, sure. So I was doing sort of in that very womanly way, two for the price of one.
And do you have people that you call and discuss this with? Is it your husband? Is it someone to say, well, we've never had the financial discussion. That's what I'm saying.
That's a really good point. The financial discussions are hard for me. It's so interesting. I'm really trying to work that muscle and get better at it. I was definitely raised with that generation where it's just not polite to talk about money. You don't ask those questions. I don't know. Like, it's all this stuff that I know is wrong, and I would advise anybody else not to take that advice.
I think that's definitely a hard thing. And I know it's hard for women.
Yeah, it's definitely hard. And I wish it weren't true. And I'm really trying to get better, because the only way it gets better for all of us is if we all are sharing the math and really understanding, like, hey, but I've gotten better about certain things. Like, I will, when friends are telling me, like, for speaking engagements and that kind of thing, I'm like, they're paying you what? Like, you need to be asking for three times that. And they're like, what? Right. And then I will tell them, this is what I get paid when I do a keynote. Like, you are way, way more popular than me. You have way more expertise on issue X. Like, you're the Michael Jordan of blank. You should be paid accordingly. And I think that's helped all of us be more transparent.
So much of what you do, it's like a snowball. You know, you do one thing and that takes on and it just keeps growing. So your book is also the gift that keeps on giving. Is it true that your TED Talk, you got 4 million? How many people?
I haven't looked in a while. I have to go Google it. It's over 4 million, I think.
Over 4 million people have seen your TED Talk.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So what was it like doing a TED Talk?
It was incredible. It was an out-of-body experience. I mean, I was so humbled to be asked to do it. And then I got really in my head about what should I talk about. I was like, well, I have to, you know, talk about saving the world, and I have to talk about business and social good through business and like all these things that I care about. And I don't know why it didn't occur to me right off the bat just to talk about this journey that I went on for this book that was coming out. And finally, I was like, oh, you know what I have to do is just tell a really great story. That's what I have to do, because I'm not an expert at blank. I didn't discover a cure for cancer. Like, I don't have that kind, which is a lot of what TED Talks are. So I was like, I'm just going to tell something that I'm uniquely qualified to talk about, which is my journey on this particular topic. So that's what I did. So I just told the story of my attempts to sort of find religion and spirituality and the answers to the big questions in life. And that I failed at it miserably. But then the, you know, kind of cutaway at the end was that, but here's what I found instead, which was that everybody, regardless of their religious affiliation, of their socioeconomic background, of anything, we're all looking for the same three things, which in my research, my qualitative research, were health, happiness, and love. And so I kind of take people through that journey.
Health, happiness, and love. Yeah. I mean, honestly, though, that's like the essence of probably why we connected.
Yeah.
Like, those are three things that are very important to me, you know, and the reason, you know, the next season of my podcast, I've been thinking a lot about where I want to take it and what I want to do. And for the third season, I realized that my passion right now is helping people. I mean, it always has been. It's empowering, encouraging, making people, allowing people to learn how to feel comfortable in their skin, which that's confidence. And just the whole empowerment thing, you know, I was a working mother, you know, I was a commuting mother. And I just really think that we need to build our community. And I just thought, who better to have these conversations than you? You were the only person I thought of.
Thank you.
You know, and you also have this amazing network of cool women that, you know, have stories to tell and have ways to inspire other people. So,
well, I'm excited. Yeah. I feel like you and me in a Rolodex and a telephone, we could solve any problem, don't you think?
The two of us, we will, you know, we'll turn it into something else. So
let's do it. I'm excited.
you know, I do believe that you're stronger together than you are alone.
I 100% agree with you. I love a collaboration. I think, you know, it's funny when I go through all the things that I've done, a lot of it's just because I've done things for shorter amounts of time. Like I didn't run a company like you did for 25 years. That was my own brand that I built. You know, it's a different thing. I've been mostly an operator working for somebody else's vision. But my favorite times at any of those places or side projects or any of it is always in a collaboration because I love the give and take of that. I love the exchange of ideas. I don't want to be the smartest person in the room. I want to be very middle of the pack and learn from everyone around me. And so that's so fun to get that advice from people and people like you.
But you are working on a couple things now.
I have been advising companies. So I started my own advisory company that I'm calling Slightly Reserved. There's a backstory there that I won't bore you with, but it's I just advise about 20 startups, and mostly it's the founders that I'm really advising. And the kind of industry agnostic, it's all over the map, everything from fintech companies to beauty and wellness companies like Natural Beauty, some supplement companies, and then, you know, kind of everything in between. It's like a nice mix of companies, some techs and non-tech, mostly women and people of color founders, which I love. And then I have a handful of legal clients just because they're incredible people. And so I can't help myself and I want to help some of those folks. And then I have some media projects that I'm kicking around, which has been a really fun, you know, kind of second chapter or whatever chapter I'm in at this point, third chapter, that I'm super excited about. And I think a lot of that came from doing the talks at Google, doing, you know, the TED Talk, certainly in the book. And doing some public speaking around the book and just around my time at Warby Parker, I started getting out there more. And like you said, you know, kind of having a bit more of a public profile, as much as you can have a public profile doing the nerdy things that I do. But yeah, so these things are now coming in. So we're developing my book into a limited series, sort of a comedy series, which is super, super exciting. It's very early stages, but, you know, fingers crossed, I think there's so much room for content as we've seen in the past year.
So this podcast is all about what people could learn from the people that inspire me. And you are here because you inspire me. Like, what do you think that our listeners could learn from you and where you've been to where they are?
Mm. Well, I hope they can learn that not knowing what you're doing is actually a strength, not a weakness. Like going into things with a bit of a beginner's mindset and staying open to things, I think can really put you in a position of strength. I think we have a culture that really overvalues expertise in a way that, you know, it's great. Obviously, you want to be an expert at stuff, but a fresh perspective without carrying a lot of kind of preconceived notions about what's possible and what's not possible can make you do things really, really differently. And so I think you can do that certainly as a company, but even as a person and the way you approach your work, I think is really important.
And what kind of fearful things have you overcome in your career?
I think I'm getting better at advocating for myself. So sort of what we were talking about earlier, just, you know, setting up what I need to be successful, making sure I ask about things that I'm concerned about before taking a position or before working with somebody or taking on a client. And that's not something I was always so good at. Like, so I think even when I left Google initially, my daughter was about 3 and I was going to Warby Parker, and the team, you know, the senior team I thought was all single, no kids. That didn't end up being the case, but I would never have asked them about how they think about, you know, working parents and what sort of flexibility they offer and all that kind of thing had you not pushed me to, frankly. So, because I remember we had a conversation right before I was deciding and you're like, is there anything left unsaid? Is there anything that you're still concerned about? And I raised this issue with you and I said, well, you know, my daughter's only 3. I think this is it. Oh, you first encouraged me to have more kids. And I was like, did my mom call you? Like, okay, that's just a sale. But then was like, well, I'm concerned about this one piece because I have incredible flexibility at Google. I've earned a lot of goodwill and trust there. And so I can do, you know, I can kind of do what I need to do and be there for my child and then also be really effective at work. And so I'm nervous about going into this senior position at a small, you know, fast growing startup. And what does that look like if my daughter's only three? And she's like, well, you have to ask the question. You said to me, you have to ask the question. I was like, I can't do it. I can't, you know, I'll wait after I've been there a couple of years, then I'll ask. You're like, you have to ask the question. I was like, okay, I'm just going to suck it up and ask the question. And
so what happened? What happened when you asked?
Neil Blumenthal, the one of the founders. And he was like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad you asked. Of course, whatever you need, you know, you should talk to Lon, our CTO, he's got kids and, you know, whatever you need and whatever flexibility you need, of course, we'll be supportive of all that. We love family. You know, we all want kids. Like he was really so gracious about it. And he said all the right things. And I was like, oh, thank God I asked, because I would have been so nervous going in. And I think it would have taken me a really long time to build up the nerve to have that flexibility and to ask for it. So things like that, I think, were really important. It's like, ask for what you need before you go into something.
And then if they say no, you have to go home and decide.
Yeah, exactly. At least you have an answer. You're not like wondering what the answer is. Yeah, because they easily could have been like, nope, we're here 8 a.m. till 10 p.m. We expect you on 24/7 and that's the deal. And then that's a different answer and that's okay. That's okay too. That could be the expectation, but it wouldn't have been right for me.
So what would you say to someone that's having issues in their career right now, or they're stuck at a job they're not happy with, or they're trying to get their business off the ground? What kind of encouragement and advice would you give people?
So these are pretty unusual times, which I think makes my answer a little bit different, because I do recognize that obviously the security of a job, the challenges of the current job market, working from home, all those kinds of things make it really difficult to make a big job switch in this time or to launch a new idea. But that said, I think if anything, or if nothing else, this past year has really taught us that life is super, super short. And you really want to spend your time doing things that you love with people that you respect and that respect you. So I would encourage you to start thinking about what that really looks like for you and telling people and asking around and finding the right environment. I think, you know, what I've found is that it almost doesn't matter what you're working on if you're doing it with people that you really enjoy working with. And so I think that's the biggest lesson that I've had just over the course of my career, and certainly the past year has proven that time and time again. So I would say focus on the people first.
And I'd also say, make sure you have a posse.
Totally.
Make sure you have people you could talk to.
Yeah.
And you're not by yourself.
Yeah. I think that's right. Like a tribe of people. I've heard friends refer to their posse as like their board of advisors, their personal board of advisors. And I think there is something to that of having people around you. I actually do this for my daughter. Every year on her birthday, I gift her what we call a wise woman. And so it's somebody from our lives. Sometimes she knows them really well. Sometimes there's somebody from my life that I think would be an incredible mentor and person for her to know and to be close to and just to have a relationship with in some way, because of whatever she's into that year or whatever she's sort of excited about, or just shortcomings that I find in myself, frankly, because I know that I can't be everything for her. And I know that there will be times that she does not want to come to me for advice. And so I want her to feel like she's got a lot of trusted women in particular around her that she has access to and that she has an independent relationship with from me. So I think it's kind of like creating that for her now at age 11, so that she has that. But it took me a long time to figure out that I needed that for myself too. So I think it's because I was doing it for myself that I started doing it for her.
That's a very cool thing. So would you also tell everyone where they can get more of you, where they could find you?
Sure. I'm on social at Anjali Kumar, or you can go to my website, anjalikumar.com. And my book is called Stalking God, My Unorthodox Search for Something to Believe In. Please support independent booksellers. So try to find it there. And otherwise, Amazon always has copies, I suspect.
And you can go into my IGTV on justbobby.com and see a virtual makeup lesson I did before we launched Jones Road. Yes. And it got a lot of people saying that they wanted to do it. So I hope it's going well for you.
Oh yeah, of course. On IG, you can find me on IGTV. I do a series called Teach Me Anything. And literally friends of mine Bobby was my first episode, Teach Me Anything. So the, you know, we do episodes very haphazardly, but they're really fun.
All right. Love you.
I love you too. Thank you for having me.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.